Okay. I'd like to call the January 4th, 2009 telephone conference meeting of the Pacifica Radio National Board to order. Madam Secretary, would you take the roll, please?
Grace Aaron.
Here.
Nia Bediaco.
Present.
Evelyn Bethune. Evelyn. Carolyn Burden.
Here.
AC Bird. AC. Kathy Davis.
Here.
Zakai Free. Zakai. Sherry Gendelman.
Present.
Ambrose Lane. Ambrose. Mike Martin.
Here.
Effie Nwangaza. Effia. Margaret Prescott. Margaret.
I don't think she's back yet.
Sara Frandawa.
I don't think she's back yet.
George Reiter.
Here.
Yes.
Bob Robinson.
Here.
Oh. Jamie Ross.
Here.
Wendy Schrell.
Here.
Bonnie Simmons.
Here.
Lori Taguma.
Here.
Lori. Jack Van Aken.
Present.
Joe Gonzalo.
Here.
Yo Shamanaka.
Here.
Lonnie Hicks.
Here.
Dan Siegel. Dan?
I think AC came on.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Secretary. I would like to appoint a timekeeper. I will appoint Bonnie Simmons.
Okay.
Okay. So the first item is to approve the agenda. I will entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I move to approve. Mike.
Is there a second? Did I hear a second?
Second, Sherry?
Yeah.
This is George.
George?
Yes, my email hasn't worked for 2 weeks. I don't know what the agenda is, but
okay.
I did have one item that I wanted to add if it's not already on there.
And what is it?
That was my proposal some time ago to have 5 minutes of appreciation.
It's on there, George.
It is wonderful.
Okay.
Yo,
you said 5 minutes, right, George?
Yeah, 5 minutes, right.
Yeah, it's on there.
Yosh for the stack.
Okay, Yosh.
Yes, I moved that item number 7, according to my listing, which is the Elections Committee report, be moved up 2 spaces to immediately after the Audit Committee, because or primarily in front of the Financial Update, which is listed for 70 minutes, but Jack has an 8-part motion, which could run on for hours, and I'm afraid we might not get to Elections Committee. So I move that the Elections Committee be moved immediately in front of the Financial Update. Second.
I second that.
Is there opposition? Hearing none. Okay. Any other changes to the agenda? Hearing none.
Jamie?
Go ahead, Jamie.
The last item, schedule executive session for personnel matters, I would like to move up to right after the January in-person meeting. It's only a 5-minute item.
Is there objection? Hearing none. Any other changes?
This is Jack.
Go ahead, Jack.
Might as well move up bylaws amendments final status. It's just an announcement. It could really be 1 minute.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any objection? Hearing none. Any other changes?
I said that I was for 5 minutes. Appreciate it.
George, you're in and out, dear. Can't hear you. You're losing every other syllable.
The amendment I have proposed for 5 minutes of appreciation at the beginning of a meeting, where is that on the agenda?
It's below the election committee report. It's item number, it's after the financial update.
Could we move that to before? I think that's something we shouldn't take more than 5 minutes to discuss. I think we'll probably get approval of it, and I don't think it's going to take a lot of time.
Okay, but let's just keep moving the financial stuff down since that's our responsibility. Is there a second to George's?
Second.
Objection? Who just came on the call?
This is Doc.
Hi, Doc. Okay. Okay, any other changes to the agenda, Doc? There have been motions to move the election committee report, the scheduling of an executive session for personnel matters, the acknowledgement for 5 minutes above the financial update. And below the audit committee. Okay. Any other changes to the agenda? Okay. Any objections as to the agenda as amended? Hearing none, we have an approved agenda. Okay. We're going to move on to the approval of the minutes. And again, I want to thank our acting secretary, Donna Neiman, for turning around the minutes perfectly and efficiently and with clarity and without complaint. Thank you so much, Donna.
You're welcome.
I know that we're probably going to have one, if not two more phone meetings of the PNB before our January meeting. And after those meetings and after the expiration of this particular term of the PND, your commitment to us, your voluntary commitment to us, will have ended. And I can't thank you enough for everything you've done. I just want to give you a heads up about that.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes?
I move adoption.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any objection to adopting the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes.
This is Jamie. Sherry, just a point of information. Which meeting are these for?
The last meeting that we had in December, which was, what's the date, Donna?
2 weeks ago. I'm sorry. No.
2 weeks ago was?
December 21.
Yes, the 21st.
Okay, and one more question. Were the changes that Jack and I...
Yes.
They have been made? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, they were. Didn't you get them?
I may have missed them.
Okay, all right.
Thanks.
Because I did send them around. And so did Donna. So, okay, then the minutes are approved. Next item on the agenda, and Madam Timekeeper, again, I'm going to ask you to... This is 10 minutes. This is the January in-person meeting of the PND. Issues to discuss, and I'm going to turn it over to Jack, are logistics of getting there, accommodations, and then suggestions for the agenda. Who just came on the call?
This is Ifia.
So, Jack, if you would be kind enough to address this portion.
Okay. Thank you. In order, because those are the 3 points that need to be covered, the meeting, of course, is scheduled for Friday, January 30th through Sunday, February 1st. The LSB delegates will be electing their directors very soon. I would recommend that as soon as directors are elected, they contact our travel agent to book their flights to L.A., unless, of course, you're in L.A., you're thinking of driving or something. So, but those reservations need to be made by the 14th at the very latest. We need 2 weeks to get the best rate, but the soonest you do it, the best. So really the next day after the whatever your election is for directors, you should be booking your flights. Accommodations, we haven't settled on the place yet. We hope to have it this week. Our operations director, Zuberry Fields, has been working on identifying a hotel that's Looks like the likely candidate is about 3 miles from the venue. And in keeping with our austerity program, we'll be asking directors to either double up or pay half the cost for 3 nights, which estimating will be somewhere in the ballpark of $150 to $170 for the 3 nights total. And finally, agenda items for the in-person meeting. I talked to the PMB chair just a little while ago. If any director who has
That's good.
Yeah, that would cover it. Any director who has suggestions for the agenda for the in-person meeting, please send them to Sherry. And if you'd like, you can CC myself, and we'll trying to get a coordinating committee meeting in here pretty quick. To start putting that agenda together. I think that covers it.
Okay. Any other items that you want to consider for the in-person meeting? Okay. So.
Wait, Wendy's here?
Uh-huh.
Wow. I demand music every time I talk. So anyway, I am a member of the coordinating committee, and I assume this is going to be talked about, but I'm just hoping that there's going to be some kind of orientation for new members at the January meeting.
Please send that to Jack, to meet, and so that we can include it on the agenda.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Rather than going through everybody's concerns, I can send out an email now to remind you all to send suggestions or concerns for the in-person meeting. Okay.
If you want, I'll do that so you can chair the meeting.
Okay, would you do that, Wendy? Thank you very much. Who just came on the call?
Dan Siegel.
Oh, hi, Dan. Thanks. Okay. So I think we are done with the January in-person meeting. Who just came on the call?
This is Zakai.
Okay. And we're moving on now to the bylaws amendment final status. And I don't know if Yosh is handling this or Bonnie. So whichever one of you is appropriate, Madam Timekeeper, it's 5 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Uh-huh.
Basically, I'd like to move that item number one of the RFP, which was adopted by this board on December 21st, be amended as follows. And I have emailed that to the board. Oh, just within the last half hour or so. Item number one, appoint and supervise a National Election Supervisor, or NES, and appoint, supervise, and pay a local election supervisor, or LES, at each of the 5 station signal areas, Berkeley, California, Los Angeles, California, New York, New York, Washington, D.C., Houston, Texas. Parenthetically, Pacifica will reimburse you for reasonable hourly wages paid to the 5 LESs. Further, the National Election Supervisor and local election supervisors shall carry out all responsibilities assigned to those positions by the Pacifica bylaws. For example, the NES shall supervise the nomination process and certify the fairness of the election, and each local election supervisor will verify and certify eligibility for candidates in 2 categories, the listener sponsor or staff, for the 5 signal areas. Each LES shall also assemble a pamphlet with statements from all verified candidates for that local station board. And this is a language which came about because there were questions from one of the 4 vendors that we had sent the RFP to, and this language is necessary to cover up questions as to who or what is the NES and what are the NES, what are some of the NES duties.
Okay.
Second.
Okay.
This is Dan.
Hi, Dan. I was just going to call on you anyway, so could you please go?
Yeah, you know, I think that the points that Yosh makes are appropriate. I would, you know, in a kind of cautious way, urge that this all not be included in the resolution, but that it be included in the negotiations, conversations between Pacifica and the vendor. And the reason for that is that, as I'm sure many board members know, in order to make sure that everyone is viewing these people as contractors rather than employees, the less direction that they have as to how to do what they're doing, the better. And I think, again, the things that Yosh is pointing out are certainly appropriate, but that, I don't see why they need to be in the resolution, just in the event that we are challenged at some point by someone claiming that either the NES or any of the LESs are Pacifica employees. And particularly, I don't like the language about reimbursement. I think the language should be that the NES is required to employ or is required to appoint an LES for each station and shall be responsible for setting the terms and conditions of that individual's employment. And then I think the basic thrust is that the compensation that we will be paying to the NES includes reimbursement for expenses, so that the proposals should include estimates of expenses, including the expenses of appointing local election supervisors at each station.
Okay. Dan, it was accurate that with the EDD last year, we did or did not prevail on some of the claims from the LESs?
We had two claims, one in California and one in New York, and we prevailed in California and lost in New York.
Okay. Okay.
Bonnie, just that?
Go ahead, Bonnie.
It's more actually a question. Dan, I believe that the language about reimbursing the company that might take this on for reasonable hourly wages paid to the five LESs is actually language that was already passed in the for the RFP. So if we do want to correct that, we'll have to also correct that language now because it's already in place. Unless I misunderstand. Yosh, can I just ask Yosh if I'm correct?
Yes, you may.
Sure. I was going to ask to be next on the stack anyway. Yes, Bonnie is correct. And Dan, just to clarify, this is not a resolution. This is a request for proposal. Now, maybe there's some, I don't know what the distinction might be legally, but, you know, this is a request for proposals being sent out to election management service companies. And basically, there was a hole in the RFP, and we're trying to patch that hole. And the RFP is already out there. The RFP needs to be modified, amended, and, you know, it's necessary. You know, we can, if someone really feels the need to delete that, the parenthetical regarding Pacifica will reimburse you for reasonable hourly wages, that can be deleted by, you know, a secondary motion, but we do need to specify or clarify that the vendor who's responding to us needs to know that they will be functioning as the NES. There will not be a separate NES from the vendor itself.
Carolyn, on the stack, please.
Dan?
Okay, well, if I can respond, I mean, I strongly agree with the idea that the vendor will be the NES. Okay, so I think that's clearly appropriate. But what I'm concerned about is the extent to which we are seeking to define the relationship between the NES and the LES. In other words, for example, the NES may choose to be the LES. The NES may choose to contract with an organization or an individual to be an LES and to pay that person on whatever terms the NES and the LES may agree. I don't think we should be mandating that the NES hire one or five LESs at hourly rates, which would then make the LES an employee of the NES. It may be that the NES chooses to have a contractor-subcontractor relationship with the LES, and I don't think we should foreclose that.
I heard a female voice before Dan spoke, and I didn't recognize it.
I'm sorry, Carolyn on the stack.
Okay, Carolyn, go ahead.
Thank you. I think that the resolution is excellent as it's written because it does address so many of the problems that caused so much trouble last time, and that is who is responsible for doing these things. So I, with all due respect, I would leave the language exactly as it's written. I don't think that if there's a difference in the relationship between the NES and the LES, that can be adjudicated later. But I think that it should be in this language now, and it should be as precise as we can make it, because it was the failure to define that relationship and to define the responsibilities of the NES that caused so much trouble last time. So I'm quite happy with the language exactly as it is.
Lonnie on the back.
And Bonnie after Lonnie.
Go ahead, Lonnie.
Well, a couple of issues from where I sit. If you define the relationship between the NES and any employee, or between us and Pacifica as hourly, you put the network open for overtime. Hourly people are paid hourly. And if you don't set some sort of limit on it, you are writing a blank check. I can claim I work 50 hours a week, and then I have to be paid for overtime. We'll lose that case in court. So I think it is important that don't specify hourly, because we couldn't afford it if it was strictly enforced. The second issue is, I think Dan's absolutely correct. If you, the 20 guidelines that exist for what's an independent contractor, and that's what we're proposing here, I presume, as an independent contractor, it means that you can't tell them how to perform the task they're professional. We're not in this area, so we don't have to, we should avoid being specific about how that person should perform those duties. So I think there's money involved either way, either through this hourly thing or in moving in court and have to pay legal fees when there's a disagreement with a person whom we say is an independent contractor, but who actually performs it. It's trouble.
Point of information?
Lonnie, your phone was going in and out, so...
It's not my phone. It's somebody's got their shotgun.
Okay. Guys, you're going to have to mute yourselves. Carol,
sure, I'd like to be on the stack. This is Mike.
Point of information from Carol and then Bonnie, then Mike.
Yes, this is a question to either Lonnie or Dan. If, in fact, the language as written specifies an hourly relationship, is there any, does that preclude the national supervisor setting a cap on that in the contract he negotiates with the LES?
Hourly is hourly, unless you say to a maximum of so many hours a month, that would be the amendment I would suggest.
Can that so, be done in the contract is my point, as opposed to in this language for the RFP?
Yeah, it should be in the contract, in my view. Maybe Dan has a different notion.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
thank you.
One of the goals, which I believe, you know, Yosh is pursuing, which I think is admirable and very important for us, is to create a relationship between Pacifica and the NES of organization and contractor, so that the contractor will come to us and say, here is the total amount of money I'm proposing for this contract. And for this amount of money, if you accept the contract, I will carry out all responsibilities, including employing or contracting with such other individuals or organizations to fulfill the functions of the elections pursuant to the Pacifica bylaws. That would be the best arrangement for us. So we say, okay, $200,000, whatever it is, you're responsible for doing everything. We're not going to be part of it from here on in. We will pay you periodically with the final payment when the elections are completed and certified. That's what is in Pacifica's interest. Once we start defining relationships beyond that, such as the relationships between the NES and the LES, we are, as Lonnie says, and as I said previously, setting us up for the same problems we've had this year, not only in terms of cost overruns from the NES, but also claims for unemployment and excess costs from the various LES people. So again, I think Lonnie's absolutely right. I think, you know, that I'm correct in saying this. We don't want to specify or mandate these other relationships. We simply want to say that it's the NES's job to carry out these functions and to employ such staff or contract with such individuals as may be necessary to fulfill its functions.
Okay. Lonnie went already. Bonnie and Mike. Bonnie.
Why don't you let Mike go first, because I have already spoken.
Okay, Mike.
Well, I really appreciate Yosha's work on this, as I have appreciated his work all year long on all kinds of stuff. But Lonnie and Dan are both correct. Most importantly, Lonnie's pointing out that the hourly wages provision will subject us to overtime, which is time and a half, and is also a specific reference that may create a violation of the independent contractor rule, depending on the state that you're in. And all of the things that Dan said are exactly correct. And while I appreciate what Yosha's done, it seems to me that the appropriate way for the PNB to handle this is that before the PNB deal with this issue, that the matter be vetted by National Council and staff, and written in a format that they both approve of in terms of the legal and the financial ramifications, and then we vote on it. So I would move to postpone this matter until National Council and staff have reviewed the matter and can represent it to the PNB at an appropriate time in the future when it's ready.
Is there a second?
I have a point of information.
Go ahead, point of information.
I'd like to know when the hiring process needs to start.
Dan?
Well, I think as soon as possible.
Okay, so this
I think, in fact, and I thank you for that question, Grace. Perhaps Mike would agree to amend his motion is to say that the board passes the proposal from the Elections Committee in principle and delegates to the Elections Committee, Council, and National Staff the finalization of the language.
Yeah, I think that's a better idea.
It doesn't have to come back to the PMB, and we can get it done in the next 3 or 4 days.
I think that's a better idea.
I second your motion, Mike.
I second that.
Okay. Since I don't have to have a substitute because my first one wasn't seconded, that motion, as Dan stated, would be my motion.
Okay. And it's been seconded. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is passed. Okay.
And we're right at time.
Okay. And Dan or Mike, please send that motion to the board and especially include Donna Neiman on that.
Dan, would you do that for me?
Sure, I'll do it. Right, I'll do it in the next couple minutes.
Okay. Madam, Yosh, is there anything else?
No. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Did we do the bylaws amendments or not?
No.
Okay. So who is going to address the bylaws amendments? Is that Yosh himself?
Jack.
Oh, go ahead, Jack. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to announce, people are asking, apparently, I'm not sure. Of the five total bylaws amendments that were proposed last year, two of them were approved by the PNB and by three delegates assemblies. That would be PBA 1, which somewhat lowers the hurdle for incoming board members to introduce bylaws amendments, and PBA 4, which legitimizes perhaps the advanced schedule for affiliate directors' elections, which the PNB has been adopting via special rule. Those two were approved by the delegates at KPFK, KPFA, and KPFT, and the other three amendments failed to win that kind of approval. So that is the status of those amendments. And I could say there's been some question and some emails about whether, at what point these amendments go into effect. Maybe we could get an opinion from Dan whether this needs to be forwarded to the Attorney General or if there's any need to do anything other than announce their adoption and adjust documents of the foundation accordingly.
Dan?
The board is required to maintain copies of its bylaws as amended, both with the, with the California Attorney General, the Franchise Tax Board, and the Internal Revenue Service.
Okay.
So there should be a process to kind of create an amended bylaws document, and it should be sent in to those entities.
Dan, do you know who handled, and were there any previous amendments to the bylaws? Have there been?
Not on my watch.
Yes, there was, Jerry.
Okay, and when was...
Yeah, last year, in 07, there was an amendment to the election timeline for the delegates' election.
Sorry.
Okay. And may I ask, Lonnie, whether or not there was a national office staff person who created an amended bylaws document and then forwarded it to the appropriate state offices that Dan has just mentioned?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Lonnie, is it possible for me to ask you to identify someone in the national office, or if that's not possible, I will appoint Jack Van Aken?
We have someone that can do it for us, although you know we're down to one or two people here in the month of January, but I can get that done.
Okay, and I would appreciate a report back in 2 weeks on that.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. And Madam Secretary, if you would include that in the minutes, that would be helpful.
Point of information, Madam Chair?
Yeah.
The normal practice is to hire the NES in April, and the amount of money we have in the budget is tied to that assumption, or at least it was last year. And so if we hire now, we will be exceeding that budget as it's currently written.
The normal practice for what, Lonnie?
For hiring the NES.
Oh, the NES. Okay, you're switching back to...
Just point of information that that's normally done in April, and it's budgetized that way normal.
Mm-hmm.
So hiring now is a full 2-3 months before it's scheduled in the budget.
Okay, but I think what the discussion around the NES was is that we want the language to be finalized. So, I mean, we're just getting the RFP out, and I don't know that the process is going to occur much before April anyway, but we need to, if it is to occur in April, we have to begin the work now.
Okay, I'm sorry, I thought you, yeah, so it would be somewhere around there, you're thinking?
Yeah, Lonnie, just, okay, so we are done with the election committee report, and we are done with the bylaws amendments, and it will be the appropriate state offices will be notified within 2 weeks. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll take care.
Okay, great. All right. So anything else on the bylaw amendment? No. Okay. We're going on to the next item on the agenda, which is having 5 minutes of acknowledgement. George, if you're still with us and haven't gotten...
Sherry, this is Jamie. I have a question.
Go ahead, Jamie.
When do we schedule the executive session? Wasn't that
last
year?
Sorry. I'm sorry. Where did I put that?
No problem.
It should be next, I think.
It should be next. You're completely right. It actually fell off my agenda here. Okay. So we have to schedule an executive session for personnel matters, and we can do that next. I think we saved some time on next Friday, or I think I penciled in next Friday. So let's just go up there 1 minute. Oops. Give me 1 second. Okie dokie. I penciled in this Friday the 9th. If that's not convenient, we can also look to Sunday the 11th. I don't think it should go much further than that.
I'd move for the 11th, Madam Chair.
Pardon me, Mike?
I would move for the 11th.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, I'm going to post it on there right now.
Excuse me, can we vote on that? I would prefer the 9.
Sure we can. Let's vote on it. Madam Secretary, would you just take the roll, ask people to say 9 through 11?
Oh, okay.
Or wait, you know what? How many people can't make the 9th? What? Let's not waste time.
One.
Say your names, please, one at a time.
Scott.
Mike.
Cannot make the 9th?
Nope.
Nia, Madam Chair, Minister of Information?
Yeah.
I think Caroline is supposed to meet Donna on the 9th, I think. So we can't make it.
I thought that was on the 10th.
It's the 10th, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nia can't make the 9th. Evelyn can't make the 9th. Who else?
Mike
can't make the 9th. Who else?
I have a question. It's Wendy.
Hi, Wendy. What?
Is there only Fridays and Sundays for the PNB? Because I hate them both.
Okay, well, you know what? It's late in the year to start switching. So we could do, Monday the 12th.
What about Thursday?
I can't do Thursday.
Affiliates meeting.
Yeah,
either. All right. Whatever, I hate them both. I'll come whatever day you guys decide.
Okay. Who cannot make the 11th other than Carolyn? Okay. So it's going to be on the 11th because three people can't make the 9th, one can't make the 11th. So, Jack, could you go up to the calendar now and put it on there at 5 o'clock for the 11th?
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. And that would be, I guess, about 2 hours. Okay? All right. Now we are... Thanks for reminding me about that, Jamie. Now we're on George. George, if you could unmute yourself if you're still on and haven't gotten on the plane.
I think I'm coming back, actually, so I'm in the airport. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, good. The proposal is to have 5 minutes after the approval of the agenda, in which people will have an opportunity to acknowledge anybody that they want to in the organization that they feel has made a contribution, and they want to acknowledge it. The purpose is to move towards a culture where acknowledgement is part and parcel of what we're doing all the time. And this seems to me a good place to start. We've been doing it at KPFT now for about a year. Although there was a sort of a slow start, people, well, I don't know where. Now there's plenty of people who want to participate, want to acknowledge somebody, and I think it's a positive contribution to the way we do our business. So that's my proposal. It needs a second.
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 Thank you.
I think it's probably a standing rule, so it probably requires 2/3.
George, can I ask a question, Madam Chair? This is Mike.
Yes.
George, is this for the in-person meetings or for every phone meeting we have for the year?
It will be for all the meetings.
Do you think we really have the time to do it on every phone meeting?
Well, Well, it's 5 minutes, and my feeling is, let me respond to that. My feeling is that the goodwill that's generated will more than compensate for the 5 minutes that's taken up.
Wendy Stack.
Go ahead, Wendy.
I was one of the people. As George mentioned, we've been doing it this at KPFT for a year at least, and I was one of the people who was skeptical about it. It seemed kind of lame to me, but I really want to say that there are, you know, we see this every day. There are people that are really doing a great job under difficult circumstances. Sometimes it might even just be acknowledging somebody for doing what they're supposed to be doing or whatever. But it's been really helpful at KPFT, and I'm sorry, I want to point out that the KPFT board is actually working together really well right now, and I don't know that this is one of the reasons, but this is the reason, but it's certainly one of the reasons. And so it's time well spent. It just takes a couple minutes.
Okay. Anybody? Mia?
Yes. I just wanted to, George, you said, I'm sorry, Chair, I think George said 5 minutes.
There's yeah.
20, there are 22 of us. Are 5 minutes long enough? How long would it?
I can respond to that.
Go ahead, George.
Yeah, no one has to participate, and typically not everyone wants to, so that in the beginning it would take 1 or 2 minutes, and now it sometimes takes 5 or 6 minutes, but it's rarely longer than that, and we have a 24-member board, so it's not typically a problem. And you can acknowledge someone in 20 seconds.
Okay. Anybody else on the stack? Okay. Is there any opposition? Hearing none. Going once, going twice. No opposition. Okay. Pass.
Thank you.
All right. We're moving on. Audit committee report now.
Okay. And everyone has received the documents. I sent them out 6 times, and I recently sent out a 990 showing everyone that as a foundation that we should have a whistleblower policy. It's question number 13 on the 990. And the 990 is an important form for any profit or not-for-profit organization, because that's the document that donors usually look at to see how many of those questions we answer yes and how many we answer no. So it's critical that as a foundation that we try to have as many yeses as possible, especially in the size that we have here now financially, that we want to make sure that we have that intact. It goes into effect for 2008. Also, the purpose for doing that is, as everyone knows, without going into much detail, there was a situation that we didn't have a policy in effect, so we decided to come up with a whistleblower policy. And it is for paid and unpaid staff. They will be protected under this. And that paid and unpaid staff will have a reference point, you know, delineating their protection. And this might help to cut down on some of our, you know, lawsuits. People will know exactly what to do and what their rights are. So I think it's absolutely critical that we accept these documents. And like I said, it is a question on the 990, and we should have it. The external auditor, Tony Pohl, brought to my attention that there isn't one. So pardon my, I'm keeping time on my cell phone. He brought to my attention that there isn't one. So for this particular audit, that will be an exception on the audit. And I explained to him that we do have one. It's just that it's been on the agenda for a while, and it has not been approved. And I told him that I would try my best to make sure that this is approved before the in-person meeting. That's not to say that he will remove the exception. I don't know in what stage of his audit he is. So that's the reason. Zakai responded. Zakai made some suggestions, and thank you, Zakai, for doing that. And I think that those are fine. I guess we could vote on them. I don't really have an issue with his suggestion. I will pull it up. Zakai, if you could just remind me when you sent this. Oh, here it is. I have it. So the guy said this yesterday at 6:32 p.m. There was a typo. You know, sorry about that. Just one question that I didn't understand what Zakai had, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
If I may ask him about his second one about deleting.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think it was a typo, and then the other thing was to make sure that the notification, how to notify, you know, about the whistleblower was posted in all the various offices. Those are the two things.
Right, for the audit committee chair's information to be posted. So I do accept those, and thanks very much. Also, in looking at this, the last paragraph, handling of reported violations, you know, you could look at this thing a million times and then realize that there's something was left out there. At the end of that, it should say, one second, let me just scroll up. I'm sorry, confidentiality. I guess when I cut and pasted, I did not include where it says, the last paragraph says, disclosure reports of concerns to individuals not involved in the investigation reviewed as a serious disciplinary offense and may result in discipline up to and including termination of employment, dismissal from an unpaid position, or removal from local or national board. That is supposed to mirror the section on where it says, in accordance with the Pacifica Foundation's bylaws. I forgot to put that in. I will put that in before I submit it to, I guess it would be Sherry as acting ED and Lonnie as CFO. So, if anybody, does anyone have any questions that they'd like to ask, or based on from the audit committee, make a motion to approve the whistleblower document?
No, Carolyn on the stack, please.
Okay. First, is there a second?
Second. It's coming from the committee, so we don't need a second.
Oh, okay. I'll second it anyway.
Okay, thanks, Wendy. Okay, Carolyn.
Yeah, I'd like to hear the revised language read again, because it's been a while. But also, I do want to point out that there are several things that are simply illegal about this motion. One is restricting people from carrying out their fiduciary responsibility, if that includes a lawsuit. And then the other is that we're well covered in a lot of ways by California code, and I think that to answer the requirement that we have a policy, we could simply say we adopt the policy of the California labor law.
Okay. Anybody else on the stack?
I have a question, Wendy.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Neil, on the first paragraph where it says Pacifica Foundation Code of Conduct here and after referred to as the code requires blah, blah, blah. Are you saying that the code of conduct is what's laid out in this policy, or are you saying that there already is a Pacifica code of conduct?
What's laid out in the policy.
Okay, thank you. Because we worked on code of conduct for a couple of years, and I didn't remember passing one. So, okay, thanks.
Is that what it pertains to?
Anybody else on the stack?
Sherry?
Doc, go ahead. And somebody else said Sherry, and I couldn't distinguish it. It was a male voice.
It was Dan.
Oh, okay. Doc and then Dan.
Okay. I just want to say that if I remember correctly, we had Dan on a call, and we talked about this language. And at no time do I remember Dan telling us that the language was illegal. And I will ask him if he would answer that question of legality, because I really think that we tried as hard as we could to make the language fit and not exclude California law. So that's my understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, Doc is correct. There's nothing about the policy that is illegal. And to respond also, which is why I chimed in, to respond to Carolyn's statement, what the policy does is it expands the rights of Pacifica employees. You know, in one way that it expands it is that I think it's really questionable about whether California law has any application outside California. So if someone was suffering retaliation in Texas or Washington or New York, I think it's questionable that California law would even apply. But even if it would, what the policy does is it adds to the remedies that are provided by California law. It creates a mechanism within Pacifica that would be available to employees regardless of whether the Attorney General or any official in California chose to recognize the complaint, and it broadens the scope by providing protection for someone, for example, who made a complaint about a violation of Pacifica's procedures that did not fit within the definition of California law. So I think that, you know, the notion that the policy is illegal is clearly wrong, but secondly, the virtue of the policy is that it provides strongly additional protections to whistleblowers in addition to those provided by California law. And just for the record, we could not limit people's rights under California law, even if we wanted to.
Okay, Carolyn, please, if I may.
And Grace.
Anything else on this, Jack? Go ahead, Carolyn.
Yeah, the question, one of the issues, of course, is that this is somewhat an empty statement because we don't have a director of human resources for the person to report to. And so that leaves the whole question open as to why we're passing a policy saying that if an individual is uncomfortable speaking with his or her supervisor, et cetera, that person should report directly to the Director of Human Resources. We don't have such a person. We don't even have a motion to hire one, which is an illegality. But, you know, moving on from there, I thought that because we're incorporated under California law, that would apply to anyone bringing a case in another state. Is that not correct? That's what happened.
Dan?
This is Dan.
Dan, is that correct? Excuse me, one moment.
Well, you know, Carolyn, I'm not trying to be cute about this. I really don't know. I really don't know.
You don't know. All right. Go ahead, Nia.
Nia.
Yes. What Carol needs to realize, this policy needs to be written for the foundation. At some point in time, the foundation will get a human resources person. So to say that we not have the policy or we don't put that in there because there is no human resources person, that is not the solution. This is what's recommended by the AICA, which this is Sarbanes-Oxley. So at some point we will get one. However, if you look in the document, you can report to the. Let me just pull it up here. There are other people that you can go to. The chair of the foundation, the audit committee chair. You certainly may do that. So we're not going to not have a policy because we don't have a human resources director. I think that that's not what we should be doing.
Well, I would move postponing it then until we can comply with all.
Carolyn.
This is Grace. I'd like to be on the stack.
Go ahead, Grace.
And Kathy, I'd like to be on the stack.
Okay. This whistleblower motion was alerted to this by Sean Casey O'Brien, who's on the audit committee. He's from KPFK LSB. And it would seem to me that it could
Grace, one second. Whoever has background noise going on, it's fine. Just do pound pound one. I can't hear Grace. Go ahead, Grace. The background noise is still there. If it's from the airport, if it's from your kids, it's from your TV, if it's from a meeting, mute yourself so the person speaking can be heard. Grace.
Okay.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The California Labor Code 1102.5 says, An employer may not make, adopt, or enforce any rule, regulation, or policy preventing an employee from disclosing information to a government or law enforcement agency where the employee has a reasonable cause to believe that the information discloses a violation of state or federal statute or a violation of noncompliance with a state or federal rule or regulation. Now, putting a number of steps in there, it might be considered to be discouraging an employee from going directly to a government or a law enforcement agency. Certainly, the availability of recourse to a human resources person, to another person, might be acceptable, along with a pending California law and other law relating to whistleblowers. But to put unnecessary steps in front of an employee who may want to make a complaint, I think might be considered to be obstructive and therefore violate this first clause, that an employer may not make, adopt, or enforce any rule, regulation, or policy preventing an employee, et cetera, because of the fact that it seems to me in reading it that this policy is a discouragement to a whistleblower. And in fact, is encouraging the whistleblower to confront the person that may be guilty of whatever real or imagined infraction of law that the whistleblower is wanting to report.
Okay, Kathy?
Exactly.
Yeah. And Nia, Madam Chair, if I'd like to answer. Yeah. I guess I'll just make a note of this.
Exactly.
Kathy?
Yes. I had a few questions.
Go ahead.
Just so that I could understand this. Is this policy only with regard to finances?
Kathy, ask your three questions. Are you asking them of who, Nia?
Oh, I guess of Nia. One is, my first question was, is this only with regard to finances? And my second question is, why it seems that the policy directs all inquiries and investigations to the audit committee, and then the audit committee would then be responsible for creating the investigation task force. So I'm wondering why there's this constriction into the audit committee. I don't understand that.
And is there another question, Kath?
No, those are the two.
Okay. Nia, would you answer those, and then I will go to Jack. Nia, you're on the stack. I'm just going to switch you with Jack, and then Doc is after Jack.
Okay. I'm responding to Grace or Kathy. Who am I responding to, Madam Chair?
Why don't you just respond?
Respond? Okay. I should have made notes of this. I thought I was going to be able to respond as each person asked. Based on what Grace read that was sent by Sean Casey O'Brien, there's nothing in this policy that is preventing any staff member from going outside the complaint. That's number one.
May I interrupt for a second?
No.
That was California law that I read, not Sean Casey O'Brien. It's California law.
Thank you, Grace. Nia.
Okay. So, all right. There is a law that says if you steal, well, depending on how much you steal, you will go to jail. That does not mean that the cannot have a policy to say if you steal, you will be terminated. That's number one. Number two, Kathy asked, is this strictly for financial purposes? This, right now, the way it is for financial purposes. It, so that's yes to that question. Although it says in the first paragraph that employees and representatives of the organization must practice honesty and integrity in their responsibilities and comply with all applicable law and regulations. So I guess that could cover other things that aren't here in detail.